Access number 11078, rail 2.
Commander going rail 2. Before we go on to Taranto, was there anything that sticks out in your mind about those?
Two interesting things. The mines from Fuka satellite to Merzima 2. Sorry, I'll have to cough. In the longest trip I ever did in the backseat of a swordfish, which was, which was 6 hours, 15 minutes, of which 6 of those hours was at night. So, that was the longest. The others were, whether they were very effective or not, I don't know. Mainly, we would take off at night, attack, and come back and land in the day, in daylight. I suppose it was to inure us to flak and to give us more practice of making night attacks. One thing was quite clear, and that was a sort of development from the war. We did, before the war, do practice of high-level bombing, in which you lay on your stomach on the bottom of a swordfish, and with a great sight in front of you, try to drop bombs on a target. Well, it was totally ineffective. It was quite clear that the only really accurate form of bombing was dive bombing. And that is what had quite a significance to us later on. So, what was it now? I don't think we were quite used to it. There was nothing frightfully unusual. We'd been trained at night flying. There was flak. And I suppose one got a bit blasé about it. So that's that one. So that brought you to Taranto.
Now, can we go into Taranto step by step in detail?
Well,
as far as you can remember it.
Well, yes, indeed. That morning, once again, I did the expendable observer with a new pilot. And when we were about 25 miles or 35 miles ahead of the fleet on an air's patrol or a search, the engine stopped. So he said to me, "The engine stopped. What do I do now?" Well, that was a question I'd never had to answer as an observer before. So I said, "Yes, well, if you don't worry, I've been in before. There's a ship, look to be some ships over there. Get off in that direction and drop in the sea." There's no, it was flat calm. So we plunged into the sea, and I went over the bow, top of the main plane, into the sea in what I like to think was a rather netted dive. But anyway, we picked up, we got the dinghy opened, and we waited until the Gloucester, which was joining the fleet that I'd seen some little way away, got near us. We ignited a flare, and they picked us up. So that was that.
How far away was that from Taranto?
Oh, 150 miles away or whatever it was. So when we got there, I was lucky enough to get the to be able to ask the captain if he could push us back to the carrier, because I knew we were rather short of our crew, because we'd lost some aircraft through petrol in the tanks, which is probably what happened with us before. So, and he very sportingly asked the CNC if he could fly us back to the ship. So we were, that was approved, and we were flown, catapulted off in their walrus, and flown back to Lustrous, which was quite fun, because the walrus had no hook. And it's the first time I'd ever been catapulted in earnest, or landed on in a walrus. Anyway, that was okay, and I got various pieces of navigational equipment, you know, replaced, and we were all ready, and the first wave went off that night. We were briefed. The person I've flown in the morning was not my normal pilot. My normal pilot was a chap called Clifford, who was one of the flight commanders, and when we had been briefed and were ready to go in the second wave, which was 819 Squadron, one of the remaining the last aircraft but one, we were last aircraft ranged because we were ranged with the bombs, which had a heavier payload than a torpedo. So in order to get off, they put us, we give us a bigger run of the deck. Well, anyway, the next to last aircraft landed on top of our main plane. And it didn't do him any harm, but it seemed to do muck ours up a bit. And we were struck down below, where Clifford tried to, did everything he could to get it repaired. And I went up and was a bit cross about this. And they said, well, why the hell, if you feel like that, don't you talk to the captain? So I went to the captain and said, could we not go the moment we were, it was repaired. And he asked the admiral, and they said, he said, will you catch him up? So I said, yes, of course we will, which was nonsense. And they said, 20 minutes later, we bailed off on our own. They repaired the aircraft and we went off. And so it's quite interesting when you've got a very heavy load in a carrier. In those days, the aircraft, as they dropped off the deck, went over the end of the deck, would dip until they got full flying speed, so you'd see the carrier above you and the water beneath you. Anyway, we were taking a bomb load, and we arrived about 20 minutes later than everybody else, which made the navigation extremely easy, because we could see what were kicked up for the other raids.
What was the scene when you got there?
Well, we were most interested in finding out where we were going to go. I don't know, the scene was particularly odd. Everything had got rather a nice hush. There was nothing particularly happening. We wandered over the top of Taranto after this attack, with practically no interference at all to start off with. We found our targets, which was a row of cruisers in the inner harbour. We managed to get into the exact position we wanted, up moon. Right? And then they suddenly woke up and decided that that something was happening, and quite a lot of things there was a great deal of flak came up then, I must admit. And we dropped our bombs, and I was looking over Cliff's shoulder, and he was a brilliant pilot and a very good bomber. I'm quite certain that our bombs hit, but I couldn't see any nice bangs. So when we were getting away, I said, I couldn't see anything, didn't I not think we ought to go round again? To which he said, don't be a bloody fool. And what had actually transpired was that we did hit the target, but our bombs did not go off. They went through. But they were enough to scare the Italians, so, I mean, that would be good fun for the Greenpeaces, wouldn't it, really? You know, nothing beastly about that. So that was that. And then we traipsed our way home and found the ship. Nobody really expected us to arrive, I'm glad to say. We did. So that was that. Yes, go on.
What kind of a ship do you think that you hit?
Oh, cruisers. Well, there were some cruisers. Where are they? There was a picture somewhere, I think. In the inner harbour. We know we hit them. And we know they did have holes in them, you know what I mean?
So why didn't your bombs go off? Because of the fuses?
If I were to tell you that a lot of bombs didn't go off in the war, early in the war, you wouldn't... There, the cruisers there in the inner harbour.
Yes.
This was not an unusual circumstance. I've seen in the Glorious, this is a diversion, I have seen an aircraft land on after an anti-submarine patrol, and because the fuses were, the bomb racks were defective, drop, the moment it got the hook, the aircraft took the hook and stopped abruptly, the bombs dropped off and went scuttling up the deck. And those bombs were supposed to be armed with amatol and supposed to be extremely sensitive. We had a long lot of things to learn early on, you know.
It was just sheer inexperience.
Yes. However, there you are. That I think you'll find the RAF had plenty of times when bombs didn't drop. But anyway, we go on from there, leave Taranto, finish with Taranto. After Taranto, we were all rather sort of pleased with ourselves. And one evening in the mess, I propounded an idea that we knew the Italians in islands in the Dodecanese were armed with guns and had Italian, you know, garrisons or small garrisons on these islands, and were pretty short of ammunition. And by that time, we were a bit blasé about anti-aircraft fire from the embassies. We thought what a nice idea it would be if we took some aeroplanes to Crete and flew off at night and dropped a bomb or two on the islands, not to hurt anybody, but to drop a flare, and so they wasted their ammunition firing at us. And that idea took on, and we had a week or so at Crete with that operation in allowed. It was lovely. It was just the whole... We only did one or two runs, but it was just... could have come out of Compton Mackenzie completely. The whole thing was simply unique. We saw these... Eastern Telegraph company officers ladling out of money to the Greek fishermen, the Cretan fishermen, to find out what was going on in the Dodecanese for them. And those are gorgeous. So anyway, that brought us. We did another couple of raids. We did a raid on Leros, and we lost a very good pilot there.
Who was that?
A chap called Hamilton, who I'd flown with a number of times. You see, we only lost two in Taranto, which was fantastic. So that was all right. Well, my lords, am I being too prolix?
No, not at all.
My lords and masters were getting very cocky. In fact, dear old Andrew Cunningham, marvellous man, but still, you see, up to the arrival of the illustrious and primitive fighter direction, the first carrier to have radar and fighter direction started on a mooring board with RT and everything else. Up to that time, the Mediterranean fleet never went to sea without being bombed absolutely silly. But high-level bombing very, very rarely hit the target. So it was very unnerving, and they did lose a few ships. But come the advent of the illustrious, with lovely former fighters, and RD, radar, and fighter, the birth of fighter direction, which was actually more important, in my view, from a naval point of view, even than Taranto. It was the Americans followed it. It was an astonishing development. Old Admiral Cunningham suddenly found every time the Italians produced a shadower, we managed to hit it down, you see. And he got overconfident. So the great convoy on January the 6th, I think it's the 6th, was one of these terrific ones where we were to meet ships from Gibraltar, we were to do sweeps in the Adriatic, we were to replenish Malta, you name it, we've got it. And the illustrious was taken. And I'm not the only one person to say this. All of us felt far too close to Pantelleria and Sicily. After Taranto, Hitler decided that this was something must be done about this. So they sent one of the most highly trained Flieger Corps to Sicily and to attack the fleet. Well, of course, they did, and our fighter defense was totally inadequate to massed dive bombing. In fact, on the morning, this morning, 49 years ago, I think we'll find. Stop.
10th of January. No?
This morning, 49 years ago, we took off on a recce which lasted 3 hours 15 minutes. I went off on a recce, right? I came back to the ship and was being debriefed when from the AIO, we were told there's a large group of enemy aircraft coming warn the fighters on deck, so I bumbled down to do that. I then went down to the wardroom where I was going to have lunch, and suddenly bombs started bursting like billio, and all the guns were over. So being an inquisitive creature, I popped up to the starboard after gangway to see what was going on. And I saw one bomb burst there, you know, within 50 or 100 yards, and a bloody great bang inside the ship. And we started taking our quota of bombs, which consisted of however many. One, two, three, four, five in the ship, and six near misses. And I'll tell you about another later. Oh, that was the first caper. So you can imagine that was pretty chaotic. And two things. There was one chap who went up with me, who was having lunch with me too. And we went to the starboard after gang. When he went up, he had a face just like yours. After the bomb burst, his face was entirely black, burnt black. All it did to me was to knock off my cap, and I remember being very anxious to get hold of my cap again. But I went down below, because obviously things were a bit odd, and I knew in my cabin there was a torch, and everything seemed to be very dark down below. And it was, because all the lights had gone out. And that I discovered, after damage control party, most of them stunned. I found my torch, and I found the after damage control officer being killed. So, in a fit of unwonted enthusiasm, I became after damage control officer for the next 2 hours.
What did that involve?
Running hoses, opening up compartments, hauling out wounded people. There's one man, I should never forget it to my dying day. Sitting by the ammunition hoist, very near an absolute whacking great fire where a bomber burst down the armour as well. This chap was sitting he was stripped to the buff anyway, sitting like that, totally unmoved.
With his arms across his chest.
Yes. And I hoiked him out. But to my immortal shame, there was another sitting on the edge of a hole where the bomb had gone down, with no arms and no legs, and I just couldn't do anything about him. But anyway, we opened up and tried to get the fires under control. We were beginning to do that. It was an astonishing sight, because there was a fire going on from the bottom of the ship. There was water coming down from the hangar where all the sprayers were on. And it was just golden. It was like a golden waterfall. I remember being rather impressed by that. Anyway, not to worry. We got things under control there, and I started to send everybody forward to see whether they could help up forward. And the bosun came down and said, could he help? And I told him that he couldn't, and he stayed a bit. And so I said, well, I'm not in the habit of giving orders to warrant officers, but I do now. Bugger off out of it, more or less to that effect. And all was well. Everybody, I was just about to sort of do up my coat and go Cora myself, when, God bless my cotton socks, a bomb burst within the size of this room from there, which was destroyed by calculations that by going down something was dangerous, I was unlikely to meet another one, but I wasn't. So I said to myself, goodness gracious me, going, you're dead. And I then said to myself, goodness gracious me, going, you're alive. This is far worse. So I hiked myself up a vertical ladder, God knows how. Woke up about 5 minutes later with a marine putting a tourniquet on my leg. And he'd been told, like all good marines, when you put a tourniquet on, you turn and you go on turning. But if I hadn't told him to stop, I think he would have amputated it prematurely. He was, yeah, it was a nice man. Anyway, I lay there for about half an hour or more, and was very lucky because this was a gangway where people were always rushing to and fro, and in the ship, a lot of officers who might be involved were given leaves of morphia and also yellow pencils to stick on your head if they give one. And they gave me lots of leaves of morphia, but forgot to put the yellow pencil on. So I really wasn't as uncomfortable as I might have been. Anyway, then I was laid out in the church. Then I was tidied up in the dentist's shop. And then eventually the ship was brought into harbour with no rudders on our engines. Brilliant. And then I was moved off to Malta. And there they chopped my leg off. And there we stayed for about a couple of months. And then I was shoved to Nazareth, to Nathania. And after being a bit bloody-minded, I managed to get to Alex, where the captain of the Illustrious was then RAA. And I went, asked to see him, and told him that we were marooned in Palestine for lack of a naval medical officer, and he sent one there. And then he got me home.
What did you think of your treatment on Malta?
My treatment?
On Malta.
Oh, wonderfully good, because there were tremendous. There were raids all the time, and they were absolutely first rate. There was only one thing that was a little bit stupid about it, was they thought I was being a bit of a hypochondriac because I complained of pains in the back of the neck, and eventually they x-rayed it and found a thing about the size of half a crown right in the back of my neck. So I was really lucky, yeah. So I was lucky. So that brought us to Malta. Then there we are. Now,